Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, there's been a bit of progress with a redevelopment project at the iconic Otorohanga Kiwi House in Waikato. They've started this huge undertaking with the smaller creatures at the zoo, opening a, get this, purpose-built breeding facility for the Mahoe Nui giant weta. This critically endangered weta can grow up to 7 centimetres long. And it weighs about 15 grams. General Manager Joe Russell joins me now. Hi, Joe.
Kia ora, Jesse. Thanks for having us on the show.
Hey, really good to talk to you. I've got a note here that it's described as the puppy of the insect world. Why is that?
Oh, because they're adorable. They're very cute.
I agree with you, Joe. I don't know if everyone listening would agree.
Well, you know, we Gynacrida, the giant weta species, they have these little foot pads like a puppy does on their feet.
Yeah.
And realistically, they're adorable. They'll hang out on your shoulder. They'll hang out looking at you with adoring big eyes. They're just puppies with antennae. That's all it is.
I love that. How did you come across them in your life, Joe?
Originally, I was taking groups of school students out to the Mahoe Nui Giant Weta Reserve in Mahoe Nui itself, and exploring the gorse with all of these school kids to get them to fall in love with weta.
Yeah. So it's named after a particular geographical area, and is that where they were or are found?
Yes. So the last remnant of what was a huge population ranging across the Waikato is actually now found in gorse, would you believe, in an area south of Te Kuiti, a place called Mahoe Nui. And they've been protected by the gorse itself from, introduced mammalian predators.
Right.
Like the rats and the hedgehogs of the world. And so they've actually survived in there despite being lost throughout the rest of the Waikato. And a beautiful family, the Raupatu family, then allowed that gorse area to become a scenic reserve. So it's now in Doc's care, and they run a group of goats around, cropping all the gorse nice and tight to try and protect.
Serious?
It's an oxymoron, isn't it, having Doc run goats and gorse? But that's what it takes to care for these animals.
Just a rare example of something which is introduced and is generally a bit of a nuisance, actually helping out a native critter.
Yeah, well, I guess gorse developed the defences, didn't they? They get against things like mice and rats. So,
right.
Our beautiful weta that we'd normally find in things like Tortora have harboured in that gorse. So, yeah, it's a hugely, really important seed basket for all the genetics of what once ranged through our backyard, Jesse. You know,
what do you mean a seed basket?
Well, genetically, this is the last of that species in Mahoe Nui, and so it's really important that we protect that reserve as it is. And there's lots of work being done by Doc in the reserve at present and work by the Kiwi House to ensure that seed basket remains. So even though we're taking weta out of that seed basket and breeding them as insurance populations in other places, there's unique relationships occurring in Mahoe Nui that we are not fully aware of yet. So, yeah, it's really important. We're always looking after the original last remnant relics of what once.
Everything you say, Joe, just intrigues me further.
Jesse, I'm sorry. We could talk weta all day.
Relationships of which we're not yet aware.
Yeah. Look, there's all sorts of relationships whenever you're looking at any ecosystem. So, yes, we've been so grateful. Moko Kirunga and Doc trusted the Kiwi House to take... originally, we brought in 12 Weta adults and discovered quite quickly that adults don't necessarily like to mate. They're like old married couples. So sometimes the females had a headache, Jesse. So we'd accidentally brought them in possibly towards the end of their life cycle. So as adults, they'll stay in that stage of their life for 2 years, but they're not necessarily producing in the latter part of that time. And that's something we didn't know. So we were very quick to bring in teenagers the next time we brought them in. And teenagers have acted predictably like teenagers. As soon as they became adults, they've been rampant, which is neat. So relationships that we've noticed out at the reserve, for example, is that they're moving across the reserve seasonally. So in the hottest part of the year, they're down lower, almost in the shadow of the ridgeline. And then when it's really wet and the soil's too wet to put the eggs into, they'll go up higher onto the ridgeline and lay the eggs there. So, yeah, there's all sorts of relationships that that we're just learning of.
Just, and I'm 100% there with you, Joe. I just will read this message from Scott in St Heliers, who's texted and says, "I'm so terrified by those bloody weta. I'm feeling totally creeped out, and I'm tuning over to the concert program until this interview is over." That's what we're up against, Joe.
Yeah, and that's probably because people stick their foot into a gumboot and there's a weta there quite sensibly deciding to tell them not to squash them. You know, weta are actually incredibly gentle creatures. You've got to work hard to annoy them to get them to click at you or heaven forbid, try and have a bite of you. But
is it the bite we're worried about? I always look at those kind of spiky legs as being...
It's the spiky legs and it's the armoured plating, you know. But when you see them face to face and they've got these beautiful little palps, little hands that help the food into their mouths, they're adorable. They've got big, droopy, you know, big glorious eyes that just are really interested in what we're doing and what we're moving around. We've just got this fear, haven't we, of armour-plated insects like cockroaches.
Would it offend you if I said it looks a little bit like a prawn to me?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, that strong exoskeleton's really, really useful if you're living in a world with more pork and other animals that might quite see you as a protein bar walking on the ground.
Yeah, protein bar, yeah. Okay, yeah, so well, tell me about your job there. At what are you guys trying to get them to do?
So we the challenge for us was to take a species out of gorse where we knew a little bit about them. We knew that they had been able to, they'd been translocated to three other locations and they had survived, but we weren't 100% sure how well they were thriving and we didn't really know a lot about what it took to get them breeding. Turns out they're very picky. So we worked really closely with Butterfly Creek and Auckland Zoo. They've done a brilliant job in breeding the wetapunga, the largest species of giant weta. And so we looked at their programs and we modelled our early beginning program on what they were doing. And then we found that our weta were very specific. They like a particular soil type. They like a lot of coverage. Otherwise, the females will actually dip their ovipositor into the soil. If they don't like that soil, they won't lay eggs. Mm. It was a bit of trial and error of getting them all the females to test out until they found a structure that they liked. And providing them with a whole variety of native planting foods, food sources, and some non-natives as well, and getting the climate and lighting correct. So it's a whole range of factors. We've discovered they really like hot nights. They like a really hot summer, and that then when they get a barometric pressure drop, That gives them the signal that, hey, there's going to be lots of food above the ground for them to eat. And look, the rain's coming, so the ground will be softer, so it's time to emerge. And so that's been fantastic, because then we can set up those parameters to help create the conditions for them to hatch if and when we're ready for them to do so.
Yeah.
So the first group that hatched was eggs that had been in soil samples for 24 months. So that's a long time to be patiently waiting for them to come out. When you think about it, we had such a rotten summer the year before that they really didn't get those extreme heat of summer that they needed. So it's all good learning.
And is the process itself fairly typical, the reproductive process?
Well, I think that, dare I say it, Kiwi males could learn a lot from the Mahuanui giant wetter.
Human males could.
Human males, absolutely.
Well, it sounds like putting effort into atmospheric conditions
is
pretty important.
It's more than that. The male creates these spermatophores, little white or almost yellow balls of protein that they place into the subgenital plate for the female, and then they sprinkle them around her and in the bushes around her as a gift. It's the equivalent of bringing chocolates. And I say that more males should do that, Jesse, honestly.
Yeah.
So the female gets all these gifts to eat, and those gifts mean that she is diverted from the gift that they've left in the plate under her abdomen. And in that gift is the sperm and a little ampule, but also there's some triggers, we think, that get them to go down and trigger their laying. And possibly also there's a chemical trigger to stop them from mating with other males.
Uh-huh.
It's all very clever stuff that occurs in our insect world.
Very clever. I could talk to you all day, Joe. We're almost out of time. Is it going well?
It is. Well, look, there are now 120 wetter nymphs we've bred, and they've reached the fifth instar. So that's halfway through their lifespan to being adults. So, yeah, we're excited. Next step is getting them out safely into the wild.
I love it. Did you have the Minister of Conservation opening the breeding centre on the weekend?
We did. Minister Portaka came through, which was fantastic.
Give them a wish list of what you wanted?
Well, we did suggest that there was a pusia to help us do the work we're doing, which is pretty cool. He's very aware of the status of this particular animal. You know, that this is next step extinction for this species if we don't take some pretty strong measures towards their protection.
Cool.
So they're in the same category as kakapo.
For people who aren't keen on wetter, there are other things to see at Kiwi House, no doubt, just briefly?
Absolutely. Kiwi, kaka, kia, the whole range.
All the big K-birds. Good stuff.
All the big K-birds, yeah.
General Manager Joe Russell, lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much.
See you later. Thanks. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.